Chapter 21. Phantom Fingers, the Case of the One-Armed Pianist. Some years ago I received a letter from Erna Otten, a piano student who had once studied with the Viennese pianist Paul Wittgenstein. Wittgenstein, she explained, had lost his right arm in World War I. I had many occasions to see how involved his right stump was whenever we went over the fingering for a new composition. He told me many times that I should trust his choice of fingering because he felt every finger of his right hand. At times I had to sit very quietly while he would close his eyes and his stump would move constantly in an agitated manner. This was many years after the loss of his arm. As a postscript, she added, his finger choice was always the best. The varied phenomena of phantom limbs were first explored in detail by the physician Silas Weir Mitchell during the Civil War, when great numbers of veterans came to the many hospitals established to treat their wounds, including what was known as the Stump Hospital in Philadelphia. Weir Mitchell, a novelist as well as a neurologist, was fascinated by the descriptions he received from these soldiers, and he was the first to take the phenomenon of phantom limbs seriously. Prior to this, they had been regarded as purely in the mind, apparitions conjured up by loss and grief, like the apparitions of recently deceased children or parents. Weir Mitchell showed that the appearance of a phantom limb occurred in every patient who had an amputation, and he surmised that it was a sort of image or memory of the lost limb, a persistent neural representation of the limb in the brain. He first described the phenomenon in his 1866 short story, The Case of George Dedlow, published in the Atlantic Monthly. It was only some years later, in his 1872 book, Injuries of Nerves and Their Consequences, that he addressed his fellow physicians on the subject. The majority of amputees are able to will a movement, and apparently, to themselves, execute it more or less effectively. The certainty with which these patients describe their phantom motions and their confidence as to the place assumed by the parts moved are truly remarkable. The effect is apt to excite twitching in the stump. In some cases, the muscles which act on the hand are absent altogether. Yet in these cases, there is fully as clear and definite a consciousness of the movement of the fingers and of their change of positions as in cases where the muscles to the hand are partially preserved. Such phantom memories and images occur to some extent in almost all amputees, and may last for decades. Although the phantoms may be intrusive, or even painful, especially if the limb was painful immediately before amputation, they may also be of great service to the amputee, enabling him to learn how to move a prosthetic limb, or, in the case of Wittgenstein, determine the fingering of a piano piece. Before Weir Mitchell's account, phantom limbs were regarded as purely psychic hallucinations conjured up by bereavement, mourning, or yearning, comparable to the apparitions of loved ones that mourners may experience for some weeks after their loss. Weir Mitchell was the first to show that these phantom limbs were real, neurological constructs dependent on the integrity of the brain, the spinal cord, and the remaining proximal portions of the sensory and motor nerves to the limb, and that their sensation and motions were accompanied by excitation in all of these. That such an excitation in fact occurred during phantom motion was proved for him by its overflow into movements of the stump. Recent neurophysiology has confirmed Weir Mitchell's hypothesis that the entire sensory ideational motor unit is activated in phantom motions. Farsin Hamzai et al. In Germany described in 2001 how there can be striking functional reorganization in the cortex after the amputation of an arm, in particular, cortical disinhibition and enlargement of the excitable area of the stump. We know that movement and sensation continue to be represented in the cortex when the limb is physically lost, and Hamzai et al.'s findings suggest that the missing limb's representation may be conserved and concentrated in the now enlarged, hyperexcitable stump area of the cortex. This might explain why, as Otten noted, Wittgenstein's stump moved in an agitated manner when he played with his phantom arm. The last few decades have seen great advances in neuroscience and biomechanical engineering, advances particularly pertinent to the Wittgenstein phenomenon, and engineers are developing highly sophisticated artificial limbs with delicate muscles, amplification of nerve impulses, servo mechanisms, and so on, that can be married to the still intact portion of the limb and allow phantom motions to be turned into real ones. The presence of strong phantom sensations and of willed phantom movements is indeed essential to the success of such bionic limbs. Thus it seems possible in the not-so-far-off future that a one-armed pianist may be fitted with such a limb and with it be able to play the piano again. One wonders what Paul Wittgenstein or his brother would have thought of such a development. Ludwig Wittgenstein's final book speaks of our first grounding certainty as being the certainty of our bodies. Indeed, his opening proposition is, "If you do know that here is one hand, we'll grant you all the rest." Although Wittgenstein's On Certainty is well known to have been written in response to the ideas of the analytic philosopher G. E. Moore, one must wonder, too, whether the strange matter of his brother's hand, a phantom indeed, but real, effectual and certain, did not also play a part in inciting Wittgenstein's thinking.